Welcome to Healthy Family Connections, the podcast for families wanting out-of-the-box solutions to parenting and relationship challenges, with your host, psychotherapist and author of Ending the Parenting Control Battle, Neil D. Brown.
Are you concerned about the bullying going on in middle schools today? Are you wondering what you need to do about it? Well, today in episode number 41, titled Bullying in Middle Schools Today, we're talking with special guest Dr. Valerie Quant, a middle school principal at Jordan Middle School in Palo Alto. Previously, she was a student services director and also a middle school principal in Santa Cruz for 6 years. And before that, she was a elementary school principal and a high school vice principal. So Valerie has the landscape. And she is also the mother of a delightful 16-year-old daughter. And I am going to tell you that this podcast is sponsored by Neil D. Brown, LCSW. And that's me. I'm your host, Neil D. Brown. And I'm here to help you create that enjoyable family you work for every single day. And for those looking for help with their parenting and relationship challenges, come on over to my website, neildbrown.com, and download my free Parent Burnout Recovery Guide. And let's all remember, this is an educational podcast. No, it's not a substitute for therapy when you need it. Valerie, it's wonderful Hello. To have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Neil.
All right. Well, you're having what seems to me to be a very dynamic and interesting career. So tell me, what's your passion? What are you seeking in the world of public education?
Well, I actually came into education as a second career. I've been here for a while now, but it was a purposeful move because I do think that education is at the core of every other thing that we do. It's the core of our society. It's the core of how people learn and grow. Uh-huh. It's how community comes together. Uh-huh. So I really feel passionate about education in general.
All right. Well, and you've been making great contributions. I know you had me speak at your school in Santa Cruz, and I loved that opportunity. I know you built a great community and a great school there. So
yeah,
let's get on to bullying. What do you think about what that bullying is and what's going on out there?
Oh, Neil, that's such a big question, and I think for a lot of kids and for a lot of parents, it is the question.
Okay.
So especially in middle school, because it is the time of life when kids are developing their own sense of identity in relation to other kids, in relation to their parents. In relation to any of their own personal identity formation,
mm-hmm.
Around race or gender or sexual orientation, and then all the adolescent angst that comes with all of those social constructs. So it's really the churning pot of interaction and realization for a lot of kids, and it's really a challenge.
Yeah, and I think that all makes a lot of sense as kids just enter that transition from childhood into adolescence. And it also seems like they are creating their first social order independently of the classroom.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So from your experience, who are those kids most likely to be bullied?
To be bullied?
Yeah.
The kids, I believe, who are most vulnerable are the ones who may be doing the most exploration or are the most uncomfortable. And it could be for a variety of reasons. I feel that the middle school age in particular offers a variety of vulnerable points: age, social status, you know, being popular, not being popular. If you have any difference or a perceived difference, even things like, you know, a learning difference or a gender difference.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times
other kids. Or being too tall or too short or too thin or too heavy.
Anything. anything, absolutely. Yeah, it might make kids feel vulnerable, and it might make other kids see those kids as vulnerable.
So it's that perception of vulnerability and that identity with vulnerability, that sense of self as vulnerable.
I think so, yeah.
Uh-huh, okay. And, let's take a look on the other side. Who are the kids that are most likely to be the bullies?
Well, interestingly, I think that they, a lot of times from what I see in the middle school, they fit a lot of those criteria as well. Uh-huh. It just manifests differently for them. I mean, uh-huh. kids in middle school often feel vulnerable in one way or another. Uh-huh. So it either becomes something you internalize or something you externalize. And I think that kids who tend to bully or harass or tease in middle school feel vulnerable, but those actions are externalized.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, that makes good sense. So rather than be, you know, you're feeling vulnerable, so rather than allow yourself to be someone who gets picked on, you do the picking first.
I think so.
Uh-huh. I sometimes wonder, and I think I've got my own evidence that that kids that get bullied at home, in other words, that have parents that shame and blame, are more likely to act that out in school, and also probably are more vulnerable to shame and blame in school as well.
I see the same thing, and I agree with that. I also want to expand that to thinking around the specific time that we're in. I mean, I've noticed a difference in the time that I've been in education.
Okay, tell me about that.
Well, students, you know, in the past, I'll just pick the past decade, they pretty much know what's allowable and what's not allowable and what okay behavior is and not okay behavior. And a lot of kids will covertly bully. But if you think of the last year in particular, you know, on the world scene, and particularly the United States, and you know, middle school kids are not immune nor naive about mm-hmm. what's going on. They're seeing an emergence of this allowable bullying, very mm-hmm. very public, very kind of vicious and very televised media overt kind of bullying, and I think it's confusing for them ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But it's allowed behaviors in the last year that I haven't seen in the previous, you know, decade leading up to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting that I'm getting this from someone who's got firsthand experience. I have read about something that they're calling the Trump effect, which is
yeah.
that the bullying has gone up in schools since the presidential debates and now the way that the administration conducts itself. So
mm-hmm.
that's interesting
yeah, I see
hearing
it.
About that.
It's so disheartening
yeah.
in schools because there is such a focus on bullying and treatment and protection of kids and especially protection of students with any kind of protected status, and yet what we're seeing on the outside is a almost complete disregard for those elements. So there's a cognitive dissonance going on in schools right now that
mm-hmm.
that is really challenging to navigate.
You know, that makes sense. I mean, if we always expect parents to be role models, and we expect our president to be a role
yeah.
model, and what is being role modeled is the way you get what you want is you insult people and you hurt people and you bully people, and if you don't get what you want, you push back harder than you got pushed.
Exactly. That's a trend that we're starting to notice.
Okay, well, I'm sorry to hear that, and I think it's important that we do hear that so
yeah.
that we can begin to talk to our kids about it.
So absolutely.
Before we even talk to have the subject of what we need to talk to our kids about. Tell me about we're in a cyber world now, and I know that the bullying, which used to take place in the hallways and behind the parking lot, now is taking place in the cyber world. So can you tell us a little about that, because I'm a little ignorant about what those middle schoolers are doing on their on their sites.
Well, that trend is absolutely true. And in fact, I was just talking about this with my administrative team at the school in a parallel kind of situation, whereas, you know, we practice fire drills over and over and over again in schools.
Uh-huh.
And we no longer have fires in schools. It's a very rare occurrence.
Uh-huh.
So things have changed in the way crises and disasters happen in schools. I would say the exact same is true for bullying. We used to see a lot more of the physical bullying, the pushing, the shoving, the kicking, and I think when middle schoolers come to middle school, that's a big fear that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And it still exists, but on a much lesser scale than cyberbullying, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing about cyberbullying that's different in this generation is that with physical bullying, adults in the environment understood what that was. We saw it in our middle schools. We may have experienced it when we were in school ourselves. We know what it looks like, know what it feels like. Cyberbullying is an entirely different affront of social interaction. And so we don't, as adults, yet have all of the skills that we need to confront the world that our students are operating in. And so a lot of that goes under the radar for parents, for teachers, for school administrators. Although we're learning and we're gaining knowledge in that area, we're not native to that realm. So we are seeing a tremendous amount of bullying and harassment on the variety of different apps, starting at texting,
uh-huh.
and then moving into the electronic apps like Snapchat, Kick. Kids don't really use Facebook, but sometimes Facebook, and then a variety of other places that they go, Instagram. Those are very, very, open platforms for a lot uh-huh. of interactions where kids do not need to face another kid
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
or look at them or have eye contact or engage in any kind of in-the-moment exchange.
So in other words, it's easier to do because your conscience isn't going to bother you as quickly or as easily.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's an entirely different experience.
And there's no teacher watching and no parent watching because it's all happening on some little device that you've got, and it's not easily visible to any adult.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so difficult. A lot of times we don't even know. We don't know until later. We don't know until a student brings it forward. We don't know until a parent checks their child's texts or Instagram account. So there's also a big delay, and that's a huge difference.
Uh-huh.
There's a buildup. There are records. There's a delay oftentimes. It's not like somebody shoving somebody else in the hallway and being brought to the office. It doesn't
uh-huh.
happen that way anymore.
Uh-huh. So it happens in the social media more often than it happens in the school environment.
That's what we're seeing, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all bad news, and it's somewhat frightening. What are some things that parents, what can parents do?
Well, I'm noticing a trend in the parents that have been working with in the last decade when this has become more and more of an issue. And
mm-hmm.
Some of the questions and conversations that I get from parents and have with parents are around ideas around private space and privacy for their children and being able to check their technology and take their technology and have that interaction. I'll be honest, some of the questions that I've gotten from parents are, well, how can I take their phone? How can I monitor their phone use? How can I check their apps? How can I oversee that environment that they're having? Isn't that their own right to privacy?
Mm-hmm.
And those conversations are really interesting in a lot of ways because parents are still parents.
Mm-hmm.
In most cases, they are still paying for and supporting the technology.
Absolutely.
And maybe most importantly, all of that information is indeed public. So if you think about something like a Facebook account or an Instagram account, those are public spaces,
mm-hmm.
but many times they feel private to kids, and they're not private.
Yeah.
So kind of navigating that public and private space or perception
uh-huh.
is really important for parents to work on with their kids in regards to privacy.
Okay. Okay. So it sounds like the dilemma is, on the one hand, parents, their instinct is to let their kid, is to be more democratic and more supportive of their child's burgeoning independence. And on the other hand, they're giving them enough rope to hang themselves, and sometimes they're getting hung and hanging.
Yeah, and it's a really critical path to walk down with your student, because especially in adolescence, you want them to have that independence. You want them to learn and grow and learn from their mistakes. You also want no harm to come to them. So, you know, dealing with those issues with your kids as an open dialogue and as an open conversation and asking them what's going on and you know, if they have an Instagram account, you're on the Instagram account. If they
okay.
have a Snapchat account, you're on the Snapchat account.
So that's really clear. If your kid
yeah.
is going to go on those social media sites, you're going to track it and you're going to be part of it, particularly in the middle school years.
I would heavily advise, yeah, parental oversight and interaction there,
uh-huh.
at least for the purpose of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
What is this? What does it mean to you? What kind of things do you post? What message are you putting out into the world? And does it harm you or does it harm anyone else?
Uh-huh. So that's the conversation that's the deeper conversation. You know, the short conversation is let's get on, let's make sure, let's monitor what's going on out there. But you're saying
mm-hmm.
the deeper conversation that we need to have is about how we communicate both electronically and in person.
Absolutely. And that, it kind of comes back to bullying in the way that when I have conversations with students,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes when they've been, say, caught in engaging in bullying behavior online,
mm-hmm.
they don't recognize it as such. They can't see the impact.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how it lands. They sometimes are not aware of what that looks like publicly, and their perception of that being public or private isn't oftentimes very clear.
Mm-hmm.
So those are it's a different playing field right now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what can and do the schools do about that? And a lot of this isn't taking place in school, but the impact of it is felt powerfully in schools.
That's a really good question, and we are challenged by that. However, the Ed Code is very clear. So, you know, the work that we do is guided by Ed Code.
Okay.
And Ed Code states that anything that impacts student learning is the purview of the school and therefore the school's disciplinary processes. So if a student is being bullied online
mm-hmm.
and something happens on Instagram over the weekend, for example, inappropriate photos being posted on Instagram, and then it brings itself into the school environment because this group has classes together and somebody's being teased about what happened
mm-hmm.
and they feel unsafe in the learning environment, that then is the purview of the school.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a responsibility to intervene because that student is no longer learning. So that's an interesting conversation to have with students and with parents as to
mm-hmm.
where the responsibilities of the school lie.
Okay.
And it's a different kind of a boundary than it used to be. We used to go home for the weekend and anything that happened over the weekend didn't belong at the school
mm-hmm.
necessarily, but it's a fuzzier boundary now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important thing to note, and for kids as well.
Okay. So what are the evidence-based practices, which I assume I'm confident schools are using, that are most effective in stemming the incidences and the culture of bullying?
Also a great question, and I think it's really challenging. But what we're moving toward, and I think what is more effective than a lot of other things I've seen in the past decade or so, is a move toward restorative justice practices, which is allowing students to truly understand and remedy their impact on others.
I love
it. It's no longer about a consequence, you know, that you get a detention, you get a suspension, whatever that is.
Whatever, yeah.
Yeah, which is much more in line with like the zero tolerance disciplinary practices.
Right, punishment.
Kids, yeah, punishment. But that doesn't teach what you do next, what you do differently, how you need to grow from this interaction. I mean, sometimes we do have to move to those.
Right.
But especially in cases of social interaction, of the social harassment, bullying, kids need to understand their impact on others so that they can learn not to do the same things.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to have a lot of training done around restorative practices. We need to take the time and interact and have more counseling services on site and move away from more punitive practices and more restorative practices. Mm-hmm. So that's the trend, and I think it's the right way to go.
Well, it makes complete sense to me, Valerie, given that these early years of adolescence and adolescence in general really needs to be about social emotional learning. And if we just use punishment to stamp out a behavior, then what are we doing about learning and growing?
Exactly.
So if we shame and blame someone who does something wrong rather than create a learning opportunity, which, you know, might include some sanctions, that's fine.
Yeah.
Everyone has to pay for their behavior, which is part of learning and growing. But if we leave the learning and growing part out of it, are we really serving anyone in this stage of development?
Right. I agree.
All right. Well, Valerie, this is a very enlightening conversation. I'm learning a lot. And so let's summarize. If you're a parent and your kid is entering middle school this year, what do we want to do? What do we need to pay attention to the most?
I think creating an environment where students can have open dialogue with their parent about new social dynamics. Just leaving that on the table every day. If it's coming home and having dinner together and you know, the academics will happen, and that's certainly its own realm. But we know that if kids don't feel comfortable and if they're dealing with social issues and they have things going on that parents don't know about, their learning is going to be interrupted anyway. So I would definitely start with the social-emotional component of middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Open the door. Talk to them about all the apps that are out there. And also talk to them about not keeping secrets around those social dynamics that are going on. They want their own independence. They want their own experiences. But you could work together on creating those experiences for them in a safe way, and that is parental dialogue that needs to happen.
Okay. That makes complete sense, and engaging our kids in those conversations is vital. What about the thing we started with earlier about where we're concerned about the climate out there that's being generated at a national level and now needing to do something to counter that at the educational level?
Well, you kind of hit the mark for me on that question, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I think.
Okay.
There is no such thing as neutrality. So I think it's a mistake to think that we can be neutral. I mean, you can't see my air quotes, but they're there.
Uh-huh.
In an environment as politically destructive as the one we're in today. I think that we do need to be overt with our students and tell them this behavior is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It is not okay to treat people this way.
Mm-hmm.
It is out of alignment with any social justice interests. It harms those who are most vulnerable, and we will not allow for those behaviors in our schools, regardless of what else is happening in the realm that we can't control.
I really appreciate the clarity of that message. That's excellent. And I think, you know, what's important for parents to hear is that that's not a statement about tax policy, and it's not a statement about healthcare policy. It's a statement about communication and the way we treat individuals and the tone that gets set at the top.
Yep.
Okay. Well, Valerie, I deeply appreciate your coming on and sharing your wisdom and experience with us, and it's been very enlightening. So,
Thank you, Neil. It was my pleasure.
All right. So thanks for everyone for tuning in today and joining Valerie and me. And once again, Valerie, thanks so much for sharing your time and expertise. And please come on over to my website at Neil D. Brown and sign up for my weekly newsletter, where there is plenty of helpful information there right now and plenty more in the pipeline. And I'd love to have a chance to answer your question, and you can submit it at neildbrown.com/submit. And please take care of yourselves. You need it. You deserve it. You're worth it. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Healthy Family Connections with Neil D. Brown. If you have a question you'd like answered, head over to neildbrown.com/submit and enter your question for Neil there. While you're there, be sure to sign up for his weekly offering. You may want to pick up a copy of Ending the Parenting Control Battle at your favorite bookstore or online retailer. Join us again for the Healthy Family Connections podcast.